now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Hello, I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and this week I'm keeping my intro as short as possible so we can get right into the action, what was, from my opinion, one of the best football weekends of the year. But I am so excited because with me today, in the flesh, is Ollie Kay, who's left Rippendon for the day. Plus, of course, we have Pedro Pinto, you know him from CNN World Sport. And also in the flesh, Matt Dickinson. Although he's going to be pretending to be on the phone and breathing heavily a la Ollie Kay. So anyway, enough of this senseless chatter. Let's get rolling. Carling Cup final. You were there. Ollie, we can maybe have a debate about what the Carling Cup actually means, if anything. But let's just start with Liverpool, though, because I thought, you know, the game kind of unpanned the way I expected. Cardiff perhaps trying to hit, perhaps trying to use set pieces. Liverpool had a lot of the ball, I thought, but and they put crosses and balls into the box, but nobody was getting on the end of them, were they?
No, it seemed to reflect a lot of Liverpool's difficulties this season. They seem to have a lot of possession in a lot of these games and create a lot of, well, shooting chances, should we put that, but whether they're often proper clear-cut chances or not is a different matter. I saw varying stats yesterday about whether it was sort of 30-odd or 40-odd shots that they had over the 120 minutes, but it was pressure on the Cardiff sort of penalty area rather than pressure on the goal. It seemed to me like things weren't quite joining up. So although they had this pressure, although they had enough chances and enough attempts, you would have thought to have won the game in 120 minutes. There was just a bit of a lack of fluency, a lack of cutting edge.
I think Liverpool have decent raw materials. I just don't know if they've developed enough this far into the season when he's still looking at ways to make his midfield work. Obviously, it hurt to lose Lucas Leiva, but I see a lot of huffing and puffing. I don't see sometimes a lot of results, but don't underestimate the importance of actually getting a trophy. You know, first one since 2006. That's important to break and that drought.
Well, we'll get to the importance of that.
I think there are, you know, look, the advances under Dalglish, but you know they are fitful. The Carroll signing is you know, much as Kenny thinks we're obsessed with him. Oddly enough, when a guy spends 35 million on the striker, we're pretty damn interested. And you know his progress is fitful. Yeah, they are moving forward, but it's in fits and starts. And he makes some pretty big tactical swings, not all of which make sense. So, yeah, I mean, it's progress, and a cup is important. You ask the Man U players. Wayne Rooney's first trophy was, I believe, at Man United, was the Carling Cup. And that, you know, not saying it, that alone put them back in at the big time, but it was, you know, it was a little step that helped to encourage them. So, you know, it was not a small day for Liverpool, but, you know, it's a fitful progress.
Is this really, I mean, I take the point, and I almost feel like we in the media are conditioned to notice these things, you know, first trophy since 2006, you know, the first trophy after Dalglish's return, and blah, blah, blah. But then I try to take a step back and try to look at it logically and empirically, and I kind of feel like, who really gives a... I mean, you need the Carling Cup to motivate you to play you better. Do we make a deal out of this?
Well, Arsene Wenger started to talk about this a year ago or so, where people were talking about Arsenal's lack of trophies, and he was saying, we don't need a Carling Cup or we don't need an FA Cup to validate or justify what we're doing here. But 12 months on, it looks like winning the Carling Cup last year would have made a big difference for Arsenal psychologically. Because if you look at it, they completely collapsed after that Carling Cup defeat by Birmingham. And it probably was a precursor to some of what followed with Nasri, etc. It sort of deflated the whole team. A trophy is not an end in itself. It's sort of another stop on a long journey, really. And I think for Liverpool, it's already been a long journey back from the sort of abyss of 12, 18 months ago when they really were in a pretty sorry state. I think they've still got an awful lot, an awful long way to go. And I think yesterday showed not so much how far they've come, but how far they've still got to go, because I think there's a lack of real top four quality in that team. Maybe they'll end up getting top four by default this season. But
who is top four quality in the starting 11? I'll throw this out to everybody.
Well, Agger, Enrique, possibly Gerrard, Suarez, Carroll, if you're playing to his strengths, you could have the same conversation about Arsenal or Chelsea or Spurs.
You can't really say that about Chelsea, many of these guys did finish top four last season.
Well, yeah, but
whereas many of these other guys didn't. I mean, Liverpool kind of a stinker last season.
Well, they did, but similarly, you would say players like Skrtel, Johnson, etc., look an awful lot better now than they did.
I grant you that.
They look like a mid-table team a year ago. They've now improved, and what they have got is probably, they've got, I'd say, the nucleus of a top four team, but the players around the edges, I don't think Downing does enough for me. Henderson, Carroll, it's...
You're shaking your head.
It's not anything like top four quality, and these are the kind of players that you're perhaps limited to attracting when you haven't got Champions League football. Well, that is the real trophy that they need, I would say.
These are guys who are good enough for a team in transition. They're not good enough for a team as the final product, and they wouldn't be good enough to play in the Champions League. That's my opinion. So when you have players like this, and you don't have two or three star names around them, like a Parker has, a Modric, like a Bale, you really can't, like Mourinho said, if you get the smaller eggs, you're not going to get a big omelette.
Dicko.
Well, I think, and also, I mean, an interesting thought is just how the off-pitch development is going to, potentially affect the on-pitch. I mean, they're obviously looking again and afresh at the stadium development, and long-term, that needs to be done. I mean, that's where Arsenal have stolen a march on them and got the worst of that through already. Now, when it comes to developing the stadium, is the cost of that going to cause any kind of sort of recalibration of team development? It's going to be interesting. Interesting juggling out for the new owners, and really the real test of the new owners. I mean, I sort of get the sense that they've lurched into a few decisions they weren't sure about, appointing Kenny. They sort of did that on the hoof. They made, they talked about a certain buying strategy, which seems to some degree to have been sort of thrown out the window in certain signings. They've had to wing it to a greater degree than they hoped when they bought the club. They put a lot of stock in FF financial fair play, sort of helping them to float naturally back to the top as a grand institution. But say they've still got some big tests and some big decisions to come, which will be the real test of their ownership.
As for Cardiff, I hold my hands up. There's a lot of football to watch. My brief is to watch the Premier League and European football, so I don't really watch the Championship much at all. I'm assuming you guys are all big enthusiasts of the Championship, especially you, Ollie. So I will start with you. I thought it's a well-managed team, well-organized. They followed the game plan, a couple decent players. Is this the kind of team that can come up and then all of a sudden be in Norwich and establish themselves in sort of mid-table?
I would say it possibly is. Yeah, if you look at the individuals and look at some of the performances yesterday. I mean, people like Peter Whittingham, who didn't quite make it at Villa and has come back and is now been one of the better players in the Championship the last few years.
He's basically a Premier League player.
Yeah, I would say so. But I think if you look at, for example, the Norwich team, you wouldn't say that's full of Premier League quality players, but they've got a way of playing. They're organised. They're spirited. They know what they're doing. They have a certain way of playing, and it's worked really well for them. I think there are a lot of similarities with the Cardiff team.
There's a lot that can be said for this kind of team that battles and runs and is organised, and they can survive in the Premier League playing like that. But you also have to take into account that this is a team that's motivated for a cup final. So whether they could keep up this level of intensity throughout a season, that's very, very, very doubtful.
And just on the sort of legacy issue, I mean, if you talk to Birmingham City fans about, you know, they obviously won a cup 12 months ago, then they got relegated, then they had this summer where everybody left and there was a very uncertain future, and thankfully they seem to have really stabilised under Chris Hughton. I think any Birmingham fan would have accepted that trade-off, and 12 months on they would say that was a trade-off worth taking. If you look around the country and ask most fans where they would have wanted to be yesterday, it would have been celebrating a Carling Cup. I think if you'd asked Arsenal fans 364 days out of 365, they'd have said the same. But then again, I guess beating Spurs 5-2 in those circumstances.
Well, look at it. The former editor of the Cardiff Daily Reader, or whatever you edited in Cardiff, has provided also the perfect segue into Arsenal v Spurs. Dicko, I'm slightly confused here because, being Italian, I look at it and see, like, you're 2-0 up. I suppose it's possible somebody can come back and equalize, but they can't come back and score 5 goals. It just cannot happen. Should we be harsher on Harry Redknapp and Spurs, or should we just be celebrating this amazing character that Arsenal have shown all of a sudden, which...
Well, we probably should be a bit harsher on Spurs than appears in the paper. I mean, there were just so many, you know, in a season when, you know, you just sort of think, well, you know, you'll never get a game better than that. And then suddenly you turn up a week later and there's a game better than that. It was astonishing, and possibly the most astonishing, partly just because of the level of dismay and then into venom that was being thrown at certain Arsenal players in those first 20 minutes, and just how appalling some of the defending was. I mean, you know, 50-yard gaps in the defence, you know, one of the worst attempts to play the offside trap I have ever seen in the first 20 minutes. I mean, just an absolute shambles. Harry Redknapp said afterwards, you know, even at 2-0, he sensed that Arsenal were sort of finding their feet and getting back into it. We should probably be harder on Tottenham. You know, you sort of associate Spurs with this sort of great balance of a team, and it didn't feel like it had that way. I was surprised he didn't bring Lennon on. I've got quite a lot of reservations about Lennon generally, but I would have thought it made more sense to bring Lennon on, stick Bale back on the left, rather than, you know, he seemed to get lost basically either in the middle or then even moving way over to the right.
So would you have done this what brought Lennon on, what, instead of Van der Vaart?
Those changes, I mean, I can see why he brought Sandro on to try and stiffen up the midfield, but the team just still looked imbalanced. I think he basically should have gone with, you know, three, you know, Bale left, Lennon right, still brought on Sandro, and probably just had Adebayor up front on his own. But the team, say for a Spurs team, just looked imbalanced. And then they had, you know, Parker, who they just began with such confidence, Spurs, but Parker sort of began to look pretty leggy pretty early, actually, and was getting late for a lot of tackles. And Modric looked just very unusually sort of subdued and overrun. It was just an extraordinary afternoon.
I agree with everything you said, Matt. That this is a team that had too many attacking players in it to play away against an Arsenal side that can be criticised, but they still have enough pace to run at teams and to create problems. It is quite easy to sit back now and say, oh, what were they thinking? They were 2-0
well up. That's the thing. And that's exactly the thought I had, Gabrielli, as well. When you're two up away, how do you concede five goals? It's crazy. But yeah, I mean, Parker can't be expected to run and defend on his own in midfield. Luca's not going to do it. Nico's not going to do it either, is he? So it was always going to be really tough if you don't give a back two in Ledley King and Kabul enough protection. When you have a look at the right and left backs who are also attacking players, that there wasn't enough metal in that team.
Ollie, you're the biggest England fan here because Pedro and I are English, and obviously Dicko's history is well known. So, is it worry you this band's taking over England? I mean, I had a bad day. Is it the kind of thing where you just kind of move on and forget about it, or could he really have done more against, you know, an Arsenal side with Rzitzky, Bellingham, and Walcott, and Gibbs?
Well, if you look at the, you know, I appreciate everything everybody said, but if you look at the changes he made at half time, that was Sandro coming on and
textbook stuff.
It was textbook
stuff. Van der Vaart would hold the ball better.
It was about going to a 4-4-1-1. It was about getting Modric out of the middle. It was about to Sandro and Parker in the middle, and that in theory looked a lot more solid. But they just. I think it was, rather than sort of individual tactics, formations, lineups, I think it was the fact that they seemed to retreat, they seemed to start worrying about what Arsenal were going to do to them rather than what they could do to Arsenal. And that was quite unlike the modern Tottenham, who are a very assertive team and have impressed in that way the last 3 years. But Redknapp, I think everybody knows what his strengths are. His strengths are making footballers feel good about themselves, energising a dressing room, giving them a sense of purpose. And I think that is what England lack right now and lacked towards the end of the Capello era.
I personally don't think that Redknapp did too much wrong. It's still weird that you give up five goals, but ultimately, you know, I think his achievements this season show that he's got a decent understanding, and I think Spurs have done well. But we'll be celebrating Arsenal a little bit. This brings me back to one of my ultimate pet peeves. When we look at Arsenal, and they've got good players who play badly, and then Arsenal lose, and we say that they lack the mental toughness. It's almost like sort of this, you know, knee-jerk reaction. Pedro, a game like this, you're 2-0 down at home, you've just got, you know, you were just humiliated in the Champions League. To come back takes mental toughness. So, do they have mental toughness? Do they not have it? Or should we just basically stop talking about the stuff that we can't measure and just talk about what happens on the pitch?
I still think they lack maturity to win big games consistently with the players they have. It doesn't mean when everything goes right for you that you can't come out and score five goals.
Immature? Look at this
With the talent they have on the field. Who's immature?
But you mean, who's even young? I mean, apart from Gibbs and Walcott.
As far as winning players, who there has won anything in their careers? I mean, the kind of winning mentality that we were talking about when we were mentioning Liverpool, I think.
I'm sure Mikel Arteta has won a title in Scotland.
Who are closers? The thing is, in football, and you talk to, when I talk to a lot of players who have won things, they say, you need to know how to win. And these are guys who don't know how to win. And as much as Arsene Wenger has a project, this project is not working because they're not winning. And the longer you go without getting up there and celebrating a title and validating what you're doing, the more you're going to have self-doubts of players as soon as things go wrong.
I don't want to you know, downplay what they did yesterday, which was astonishing, but in some ways it's the easiest mental resolve to come by. I think this was a sort of comeback plucked from sort of fear of humiliation and almost a sort of well, you know, can it get any worse? You know, it's sort of almost out of desperation, basically. And that's, you know, what we look for Arsenal is to be, you know, more assertive, you know, and someone like Walcott sums it up. Look for someone like him to dictate games from the start against all kinds of opposition, whether it's top opposition or sometimes, you know, this sort of complacency we see against some of the weaker teams.
I mean, they did it 4 weeks ago, didn't they, in the cup against Aston Villa. They were 2-0 down and it looked like they were staring into the abyss and ended up winning 3-2. 2 and 3 goals in very quick succession. It was quite similar in many ways. But I mean, Wenger will come out and talk about their wonderful mentality. I don't think anybody can really think they have a wonderful mentality. They believe in what they're doing, and on those two occasions they got it absolutely right by carrying on doing what they were doing and doing it well. But there are at least as many occasions where the opposite happens and they crumble. And I mean, we haven't spoken about them yet, but Manchester United yesterday conceded an equaliser late on in the game, and yet 90 minutes Ryan Giggs pops up and scores the winner. Manchester United have, I mean, I would love to see the statistics about how many times Manchester United have been on each end of those kind of results as opposed to Arsenal. It seems to me that Arsenal, yes, they do win a lot of games late on, but they also drop a lot of points late on. Manchester United know how to win games, and they know how to close games when they're already winning. That to me is a team with a strong mentality.
I just think the stars lined up for Arsenal yesterday when you have Thomas Rosicki, you know, playing like he used to play at Dortmund, and you have Theo Walcott playing like he could play in the second half, and you have Van Persie being probably the best forward in the world right now. It just clicked. Okay, it doesn't mean that suddenly they're going to go on and win 10 games in a row, but then again, it doesn't mean that they're as bad as everybody sometimes says they are. But they're going to go on and lose 8 games in a row.
Interesting point, just as a complete aside, totally unrelated. You said Robin Van Persie, probably the best center forward in the world right now. Hard to disagree, certainly in the conversation. Pep Guardiola said at the weekend that Falcao was the best forward in the world right now. From your blank-eyed stare, I'm assuming you disagree.
He's the best finisher in the world of football right now. From what I saw at him at Porto last year, and the variety of goals which he scored. I mean, I think he scored a goal with every little part of his body. And I'm talking about from the kneecap to the back heel. And that gives me a chance to plug that amazing goal by Cristiano this weekend. If you haven't seen it, check it out against Rayo Vallecano. But yeah, best finisher, Falcao. Best overall forward in the game, Van Persie.
He's got to be the player. At the moment, he's got to be clear front runner Footballer of the Year. And there was a great moment yesterday that we saw in the second half where I think it must have been when they were 4-2 or 5-2 up, where he just decided to take the mickey and did a pirouette in the middle and pulled it off. But it's just there can't be anyone playing better football, any individual playing better football anywhere apart from that bloke at Barcelona. I can't remember his name.
Dani Alves. Right, so just to wrap this up, because people...
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Full of spurious predictions that they can then come back and throw in our faces. I'm assuming we all have City, United, and Spurs finishing in the top three in some order. So I will ask you, beginning with Mr. K, who's finishing fourth?
Gosh. Arsenal.
Pedro?
Chelsea.
Dicko, you have the deciding vote.
I go probably just with Chelsea.
Oh, nothing like a midweek England friendly to get those juices flowing. Stuart Pearce is in charge for this one England game. And there's obviously so much negativity about the national team. Even with his former manager gone, there's still so much negativity now. But I want to look at this slightly differently. We've had the build-up that we expected, everybody pulling out, picking up phantom injuries and stuff. And I'm assuming, you know, the only reason people will pay attention to this thing on Wednesday is that there's going to be no other football. But Ollie, can you cheer me up? Give me some positives. If you were in Stuart Pearce's head, or Stuart Pearce came to you and said, like, Ollie, what should I do with this? Might you suggest to him, hey, why don't you call up all the guys who never got a chance, Fraser Campbell, Mika Richards, or haven't got much of a chance, and then, you know, see if this New England kind of excites people rather than calling up people like Rooney who are going to get hurt anyway and pull out, which he did.
Well, I mean, he has picked those couple of players, Richards, Campbell. He's picked a lot of the players who were just getting into the squad under Capello, i.e. Smalling, Jones, Cleverley, Welbeck, Sturridge. People were saying, oh, it's going to be an incredible fresh new squad. It's going to, you know, it's not going to be all the old guys that Capello picked. Capello had started picking these young guys, the ones I mentioned. So it's not like it's some huge leap into some brave new world by Stuart Pearce. People say, well, why has he picked Gareth Barry? Why has he picked Stuart Downing? If you were going to pick a team that didn't have any of these sort of B-list, C-list mediocre players who are in the England squad, and that might be a bit harsh on Gareth Barry, might not, you're going to be scraping the barrel before long. I, to be honest, I think Fraser Campbell is a bit of a barrel scraping selection. He's not one that I don't think he'd get in the Holland squad. Put it that way, I don't think he'd get in Spain's D squad, even though they're not particularly.
Then again, there's only three strikers in the squad.
Yeah, exactly, and it's. There isn't strength in depth. People were looking for more young players, more unproven players. And to be honest, I'm thinking, well, where are they? They've got, you know, Sturridge, Cleverley, etc. in the squad, Smalling. There isn't an awful lot beyond those. I mean, you could talk about people like Danny Rose, or you could Nathan Dyer at Swansea is one who I thought might.
Those are more wingers.
Yeah.
Dicko, what about taking this opportunity, maybe trying something like, you know, Walcott through the middle? Which I know, I mean, you wrote about Walcott today. Obviously, you know, Wenger uses him on the wing, Capello used him there, but I don't think, you know, it's set in stone that he can't play second forward.
He's best as I would have said, and on the right of a 4-3-3, basically attacking, and I think that's the system that England are best set up to use in any case. I'd play Welbeck, Sturridge and Walcott myself.
At the Euros?
Well, this week and looking towards the Euros, yeah, I think that's.
But don't you then have a big problem when Rooney comes back from a suspension?
Well, that is potentially the problem. I mean, it's a good thing about Rooney. The great thing about Rooney is that he can play number 9 or 10. He had that prolific season. You know, it's not how he's playing more regularly for United, but I think he's capable of it. And you know, we are not blessed with number nines. I think Welbeck is the best of a bunch, but he's still young, still exploring his potential. So you know, it's quite possible he'll have a dip. So I think we need to keep options open because we've got, you know, kind of flimsiness in the squad. But I think there's certainly 4-3-3 is how I'd set it up for now. I think it plays to I wouldn't say plays to strengths, but masks a few weaknesses, hopefully. And I actually think Pearce has got the balance about right. It's not, there's an awful lot about Pearce I'm very unsure about. But you know, I think the pitch is about right. He's made a point by leaving out a few of the real old timers, Rio and Lampard and so on. He's brought in, you know, he's not been silly, but you know, and he's looking to put the accent on youth, and I think that's about the right pitch. You know, I would play the strongest team I've got available, but with the accent on a younger player where there's any dilemma.
He's been a bit silly by bringing in Fraser Campbell.
Well, okay, a little bit silly. But every manager, every manager's allowed their one sort of slightly weird hunch. I guess we've all got them, or we'd all like to have problem if we were in the same shoe. But yeah, that's a bit silly. But yeah, you can't. I mean, Lescott I'd have put in because I think yes. he still needs some big game. You know, he's still a developing England senior player, and it seemed a bit odd to leave him out. But you know, I think playing Jones at centre half is and Smalling together is no bad thing. You know, say I'm quibbling with his squad. I'm certainly not taking a shotgun to it.
I just wanted to add something really quickly, and maybe I'll be ridiculed now, but I think it'd be interesting to have a look at Joe Cole. Lille are on a really good run right now in the French League. Just because he plays outside of England doesn't mean he doesn't exist.
I do think that comes to a point where you, with certain players, you know, you obviously don't want to throw away talent, and England certainly can't afford to throw away talent. But I think there are times when you have to move on. And someone like Sturridge is playing well enough that he's a different type of player from Cole. But in the sort of system England are looking at, it'd be fighting for the same sort of position. And I think they need to be looking. At the Sturridges rather than going back to Joe
Dicko, Cole. I want to ask you about that, about specifically on Sturridge, because the guy thinks of himself as a centre forward. I think he's right. I don't think he's played well this year. I mean, he played well. He scored a lot of goals for Chelsea. Most of Chelsea have basically stunk it up, and you know he hasn't.
He's been Chelsea's second best player. Come on.
Yeah. Got it. I don't think he helps generally in a larger team, and I don't think there's a future for him playing on the wing. If you want to start playing him through the middle, and basically do what Torres was supposed to do, then that's fine, or in a different system. But do you think Sturridge can play wide in a 4-3-3 for England and not?
Yeah, because well, you say on the wing. I mean, I think in that system, I think he can work. I mean, you know, I have reservations about him. I think there are times at Chelsea he does. Yeah, his sort of he doesn't help the flow of a team. The ball gets to him sometimes, and we have to sort of all stand there watching as he goes off on some slightly self-indulgent run, or misses a quick layoff, and he can frustrate. But he's a young player still developing, and I think he can play in that system. I think I think Walcott is perfectly attuned for that one, the slightly wider player in the 4-3-3, and I think Sturridge, it might not be the perfect position, but then we haven't really seen him as a number nine, and I would certainly England can't just throw him in there. He might think he's more of a sort of classic striker, but I don't see how that's going to work in England's system. And I think he brings strengths that can be used wide in a 4-3-3.
And with Walcott and Sturridge, there's the same thing. They both think of themselves as strikers. They're not going to be the strikers in the system that their clubs use, because it's broadly a 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1. They're not going to be playing through the middle in those systems because they're not developed enough, and they're not probably mature enough and clever enough players to do that.
Yeah, so this maturity thing, I mean, yeah, Sturridge is 22. He's been basically a star and talked about since he was 14. He's played for 17 different clubs or thereabouts. I mean, I
really like Sturridge.
Welcome to him.
Every time I see him play, I think he's got that extra level of technique that you don't see in the England team.
Speaking of extra levels of technique, just very quickly, why isn't Andy Carroll there?
He's out of form in Pierce's mind. I think he's actually in the best form he's been in for 14 miserable months. But I thought that after the withdrawals of Bent and who else was it pulled out? Rooney. I thought maybe they'd call Carroll up. I think he's still an option that is worth considering for England, particularly in this necessarily Rooney-less system in the first two games.
Yeah,
he wouldn't be plan A, he wouldn't be my plan B, but England needs to be thinking of plan C, plan D.
Plan C, playing Carroll, Carragher.
This is a bit of a get the stick out for Carroll, I think, isn't it? I think Pierce has had his issues with him previously, and I just think this, and I agree with it, I think this is a sort of look, you are playing a bit better, but not so well that you're just going to swan back into the England team, and I think giving him a bit of a, using the stick a bit on, I mean, he doesn't walk into my Euro squad anyway, but I think giving him another the prod is no bad thing.
All right, since you guys are in the know, I'm sure you are too, Pedro, but I want to get Ollie and Dicko on this, since this is their brief. Are we any closer to having a new England manager? Have they spoken to Harry Redknapp? Is he on their list? Do they have a list, or is it just the one name?
He's certainly on the list, and I think it is a list rather than a piece of paper with Harry Redknapp's name on it. Apparently, they haven't spoken to him. Apparently, they haven't spoken to Spurs.
Pedro, like me, you don't have a horse in this race, so and I'm assuming that Redknapp, if you have to choose an English manager, is first choice. But who would second choice be if the FA had to choose an English manager for the Euros, in your opinion?
I'm pretty sure there are only three English managers in the Premier League right now.
But you can choose. You can choose an unemployed. You can choose Kurbishley or Shearer.
I'm sorry, but you know, when I was looking at this, I was really shocked that there aren't not more English managers at the top of the game.
Is Ted Connors English?
Yeah.
There you go.
And
four then, right?
I was shocked, like most of the international press, that you would let a guy go who's won what he's won, like Capello, and you don't have a plan B immediately, and then you sit around waiting for I don't know what to name someone else. It just, as a from a management point of view and from an outside point of view, this makes no sense. The only guy I see is Roy Hodgson. I'm sorry, that's it. That's who I got. I don't have it. He's got international experience, and He tactically, I believe he's quite sophisticated. But you're right. Is that a valid plan B? Maybe
are you,
not.
Are you assuming it's got to be English? Are you setting a category here that it has to be English?
Yes.
Yes.
Because they've come out and they said it would be better.
They have said privately that sort of, well, of course we want it to be English, and they can say that because they think they've got an English person in Harry Redknapp to take it. But if that was to fall down for whatever reason, then they would suddenly start saying, well, sort of British is pretty English. And actually even sort of, you know, Arsene Wenger is one of our foreigners. You know, the parameters will be widened if Harry falls through for whatever reason. You know, Martin O'Neill will suddenly become very English.
Stop being Irish.
Yeah, exactly.
But seriously, Dick, if you had to pick an English one, right? I mean, I think they would lose even more credibility if they went and they did that. But hey, you know, there's billions of good Scottish managers. You know, why not go and do that? But if they do stick with an English one, I mean, is it going to be, is it Pearce, Hodgson, Kurbishley, any of these people, Steve Bruce?
Well, this is the
Holloway,
the lovely dilemma we're left with. I suspect they
Big
would.
Sam.
It would end up probably being Hodgson if
Martin Allen. Ollie, you get the final word. You've had time to think about this because you knew I was going to ask you after I asked Pedro and Dicko.
Well, I've had time to think of it for the last 3 weeks, and I know that there's not really a compelling plan B. I mean,
would Kurbishley be so bad?
Yeah, I think Kurbishley would be awful. I think Kurbishley is a good manager for a certain situation. I think he did a brilliant job at Charlton, but I've got to say, I think if Wolves had appointed him, I think that would have been a mistake. So why would I want England to appoint him? I mean, there are so few English managers. All of them have sort of different strengths and weaknesses. I don't think any of them, apart from Redknapp, looks a credible candidate for England beyond the show. You know, even Redknapp, I would say, his strengths are only suited to the Euros and to doing something short term. I don't think it's a good job for him to take long term. As for what happens after the Euros, I don't know. To be honest, I would love Arsene Wenger to do it. I think that would be a brilliant move for English football.
Time now for some quick hits. Manchester City pummel Blackburn 4-0, and Super Mario Balotelli scores the opener. Ollie, since these things really, really, really matter, tell me all about the fact that he smiled and what his body language was like. No, just kidding. Tell me if this is the City we saw earlier in the season, or if Blackburn were just terrible.
Well, Blackburn were terrible and very unambitious, which I suppose is understandable from one point of view, but that was more likely early season City. Yaya Toure was back to his excellent form. The forwards all played well. It was just a very convincing, controlled, fluent, efficient, successful performance.
And Super Mario showed that he's a romantic at heart, which I thought was very, very sweet. Manchester United keep pace with City with a late goal at Norwich to win 2-1. Two youngsters named Scholes and Giggs were on the score sheet, and Sir Alex Ferguson said they were the finest United has ever produced. Dicko, you've got more of a sense of history than I do. Is Fergie exaggerating a little bit? Are these guys finer than, say, Bobby Charlton and Duncan Edwards?
Well, I mean, how are you measuring it? In terms of medals, clearly they're among the most successful players in the history of the game, certainly in terms of English football. But I increasingly find myself drawn to the Cruyff school of how do you compare, and refusing to compare generations. I mean, Duncan Edwards, obviously the tragedy of Munich. How can we compare, him and what he might have become with players who managed to see through a long career? So Scholes and Giggs are legends. Let's leave it at that.
And so is Bobby Charlton. I think we'd all agree with that. Chelsea roll over Bolton 3-0 as Andre Villas-Boas reintroduces Ashley Cole, Michael Essien, and Frank Lampard to the starting 11. Pedro, do you think AVB got some quote-unquote advice from upstairs? And are Chelsea's problems now a thing of the past because they can score 3 second-half goals against Bolton?
People who love conspiracy theories would love to think that Andre got some nudge from upstairs. I think he had to start seeing the obvious, which is this is too quick to change the team in half a season, getting all these influential guys out. So my answer to that is no, he did not get advice. And do I think the problems are over? I think the situation is better. But he's got still a lot of unhappy characters in the squad.
And we've only just begun. Newcastle go 2 goals up at home against Wolves, then end up drawing 2-2. A man named Terry Connor was managing Wolves. Ollie, who is this guy, and why did it take the club so long to appoint him?
Well, Terry Connor used to play for Leeds and Brighton back in the 80s and was a sort of decent plodding centre forward. Sort of seemed to disappear a little bit. I was apparently on the coaching in the community staff at Swindon Town, then joined the coaching staff at Wolves, and then somehow ends up as Wolves manager. And that is a lovely sort of rags to riches tale in one sense. But he's also a black manager, and we've been saying about black managers not getting opportunities. But it's a great human story. But then there's obviously the sort of farce that surrounded his appointment at Wolves, and they were interviewing everyone from Alan Kerbishley to Walter Smith to Steve Bruce, and trying to get Brian McDermott and Gus Poyet. So it seemed like a bit of a mess. Seemed like he got the job by default, but let's hope for his sake and for Wolves' sake he can make a good job of it.
I believe Wolves claiming that they only actually offer the job to one person before Connor, who I'm assuming is Walter Smith.
Yeah, well, I mean, they there was a suggestion that they were actually in at the point of sort of drawing up a contract for Steve Bruce, and then they changed their mind. So, I mean, whatever they say, he was not their first choice. This was not the plan 2 weeks ago, but maybe they'll have got the right man by some freakish default.
Aston Villa get a point at Wigan, but lose Darren Bent to injury. Dicko, with Robbie Keane back in MLS and Bent hurt, should Alex McLeish run around doing his Chicken Little thing because, well, the sky is falling?
Well, they don't want to go down, are they? 8 points clear of the drop, and it's going to take, how long does it take Blackburn to win 8 points? An awful long time. So they're going to stay up. But yeah, it's a bit of a mess. I could see why Randy Lerner turned to McLeish. I thought there was some logic to it, but it's going worse than I expected, and certainly than Villa expected. And he obviously doesn't have the goodwill of the fans to play with. So yes, it's sticky times ahead.
To be fair to McLeish, it's not like he went and injured Darren Bent. There we were, praising Martin O'Neill for Sunderland's turnaround, and then suddenly they go and lose 4-0 to West Brom, managed by one Roy Hodgson. Pedro, O'Neill confuses me, so please shed some light. Is this just a weird blip?
O'Neill is a motivator, an expert motivator, so any team he picks up where they are disillusioned, as was the case with that team with Steve Bruce, he was going to have a big effect. Are they as good as they've been recently by getting the best form since Christmas? No. But they'll stabilize and be a mid-table team, and O'Neill is good enough to lead them to that kind of standing, and that's what they wanted.
Gab, one for you. Milan and Juventus drew 1-1 at San Siro, but the Rossoneri are angry because of a goal that wasn't given. What's the story?
I wrote this in the script, that basically the goal wasn't given. Montari's header crossed the line, and Buffon then palmed it back out, and the linesman didn't see it. And it, basically everybody agrees, once again, that we should have goal line technology, which we may or may not get this July when IFAB meet up again. But rather than answer that, I rather just talk about what a fantastic weekend and how many great things happened. We talked a bit about the Carling Cup and Arsenal and Spurs, but you had Paris Saint-Germain, incredible 4-4 draw with Lyon with a last-ditch header from Horreau. This Milan-Juve game was, I thought, absolutely fantastic. You had Ronaldo's crazy backheel. You had Leo Messi's crazy free kick. You had Bayern and Ribery. What a performance. I just think we should all take a moment after this podcast, of course, and celebrate the beauty of football. Ha. Leave on a positive.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. That's it for this week. But remember, you can always go to www.thetimes.co.uk. You'll find your news, your gossip, your analysis, web chats. Ollie K does his web chat every
Wednesday.
Every Wednesday, there you go. You can catch me on Tuesdays. We're also all on Twitter. And I will now ask you guys to give me your Twitter handles. Ollie.
Oliver K. Times.
Pedro.
Pedro CNN.
And of course, I'm just Mark Cotti. Like Liberace or Madonna, I only need the one name. Till next week. Bye-bye.
Listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.